Welcome to Worlds Apart. The 21st century is widely believed to be about the rise of China, the continent whose name comes from a Greek word meaning to rise. But despite being called the land of the rising sun, Asia is no one land. In fact, it's the biggest and the most dispersed of all continents, with many lands wanting to shine and grow. Is it possible to rise and let rise? Well, to discuss that, I'm now joined by Dr. Pornchai Dandivathana, Secretary General of the Asian Cooperation Dialogue. Dr. Pornchai, it's great to talk to you. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much for giving me an opportunity to say a few words about the ACD.
Now, your organization, the ACD, was created some 20 years ago with the goal of facilitating communication and cooperation across the whole of Asia. And the task seems pretty straightforward, but when we look deep down, it must be pretty challenging because Asia is such a diverse continent. It spans all the way from Russia's Far East, where we are right now, down to the giants of India and China, across the island nations of the Pacific and Indian Ocean, and all the way to the Gulf. This is an immense diversity. I wonder if there's anything in common among all those Asian lands.
Of course, this is perhaps the beauty of Asia, and perhaps this is the reason why we need to have this forum. This forum is like a platform for Asian countries to discuss or deal with issues in Asia so that we can have our common understanding. This is the reason why we need this platform. You talk about our common denominators or something. Yes, of course, we have our common understanding and, of course, a political will to work together. And at the initiative of the Kingdom of Thailand in 2002, this forum was established.
Mm-hmm. Now, it was established thanks to the Thailand Initiative, but it's now headquartered in Kuwait. And
yes,
we are recording this conversation on the sidelines of Vladivostok Economic Forum. And I think for the first time in many years, we have a very large delegation from the Arab countries, which is a very interesting and very unusual, at least for us, the Russians' Asian dimension. I wonder if the Gulf culture, the Gulf mentality, the Gulf diplomatic style adds anything particular to the work of your organization?
In fact, I don't think it's only about the Arab countries, but also regional or sub-regional blocks in Asia have already fulfilled this kind of activities to make it realistic. Because if you ask me about Arab diplomacy, Arab mentality, I think they uphold peaceful coexistence, peaceful solution in order to cooperate together. That is something supplement and complement the ACD, which also uphold principles of informal dialogue, voluntarism, and also shared commitment to cooperating with one another. So that is how we can work together and also cooperate with one another now in that spirit.
You mentioned this sort of strive towards peaceful solutions, and I don't think there is a single country in the world that would argue against peaceful solutions, but the way they go about it is very different. The last time I checked, Asia had 48 countries, not all of them, by the way, are members of your organization, but many. And those cultures, those nations have sometimes long-standing grievances. I wonder, how do they go practically about peacemaking and more specifically about neutrality? Because I think this concept of neutrality is changing recently, especially in the light of well, the trend in the West to take sides or pressure other countries to take sides?
Well, you are right in the sense that geopolitical landscape or geopolitical architecture has changed rapidly, not only in Asia, but every corner of the world. You asked me how we have, I would say, survived this far.
And function effectively,
yes,
as well.
Yes, yeah, that's right. Starting from 18 members at the beginning, there are 35 at the moment. So it is quite an achievement for us from 18 to 35. And the other is about common denominators, meaning that we work on something of the least controversy. For example, we have six areas of cooperation: connectivity, education, science and technology, culture and tourism, SDGs. They are in the interest of all. So we can work with such areas of cooperation with no hesitation.
I heard you say at one conference that dialogue and project-based activity drive cooperation forward and allows that cooperation not to be politicized. Can you speak more specifically about that? Why is that? From what I understand, this is actually a technical framework that allows certain results to be achieved.
That is true, because first of all, we do not want to be politicized.
And why don't you want to be politicized, by the way?
Because in fact, we cannot deny that politics are always at the back of our mind. Every forum that we attend more or less would talk something about politics. But if we look back at the ACD, it's about non-political platform. So we can discuss something of common denominator, as I just explained to you. That is why we would rather not talk about politics at all. Because if one say something about refugees, others would say about boundaries, and so on and so forth. So it's going to be endless, and it's not going to be productive for Asia. That is why we need this forum.
I think in the past, politics and governance were thought of as related concepts. Do I understand you correctly that your organization primarily focuses on governance, how to deliver governance, rather than engaging in politics?
We cannot do away with governance in any way, whether internationally or domestically. But we are not going to discuss so much about that, because we would rather leave it to the domestic requirements or national policy of each country, rather than to make it out loud at the international forum like the ACD.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're speaking very diplomatically, and I know you have a very long resume with the Thailand Diplomatic Service. In fact, you worked for a number of years with the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, and this organization finds itself in a rather challenging position right now. And you know, the so-called ASEAN spirit is under some pressure. This consensus-geared approach, they're finding it hard to realize. I just came back from their summit, and they're talking openly about that because the great power rivalry is pushing them in different directions. Is that also the case with your organization, and how have you been able to withstand that pressure?
One of the core issue is about consensus or consensus building. Because I happen to come from a country in Southeast Asia, so I know a little bit about consensus building. Consensus building is one that would develop into confidence building, and that would be something to sustain our future. As long as everyone has one voice, but that voice will definitely be heard. That is the crux of the issue of consensus. So with that, I think this is another perhaps form of beauty of the ACD.
You mentioned consensus, and this is such a difficult concept to comprehend because many organizations, for example, the European Union is also supposedly based on consensus, but you know, there are many different ways to go about it, and sometimes consensus is confused for uniformity. What are some of the ways of actually ensuring authentic consensus, the one that will preserve the goodwill of the country and preserve the spirit of cooperation and wanting to engage and go forward together despite all the challenges that the nations may have?
Well, in fact, you speak very eloquently about consensus already, because even though ASEAN, for one, has been familiar with consensus even before the Cold War, but after that, at the UN, we nearly all resolutions have not yet been put forward in principle, unless and until on some exceptional cases, because members prefer consensus. This is something that requires political will at the very beginning. So if you ask me whether we can differentiate between the authentic or non-authentic, I would say if political will is there, why not? Where there is a will, there is a way.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Now, another organization with which your work intersects is BRICS, and it recently made the decision to include 6 new members. And like the ACD, BRICS is also a loosely structured, consensus-based group, which doesn't demand uniformity from its members. And I wonder, why do you think such a format, loose format, consensus-based, goodwill-based format is gaining seemingly gaining popularity in this day and age, because many organizations are sort of moving towards it?
Two things. One is the need for multilateralism that we have called for, especially nowadays. But multilateralism can be in any form, whether in an international organization or not, like BRICS or APEC or the ACD. The other is that we have our mechanism. For example, we are going to have a ministerial meeting in New York on the sidelines of UNGA this month, followed by the third summit next month in Qatar. So these are the mechanisms of the ACD so far, other than SOMS and other working groups under ACD Blueprint 2021 to 2030. So when all are in place, that would be another way to promote cooperation and, of course, mutual understanding.
Mm-hmm. Well, mutual understanding requires also mutual knowledge. How well do you think your members know one another? Because I have to tell you that even here in Russia, we do not understand all the variety that your organization, Asian variety that your organization represents.
Because if it is a loosely structured organization or informal in nature, that would help create atmosphere of friendship conducive to agreement. That's how I'm coming from.
Okay, Dr. Pornchai, we have to take a very short break right now, but we will be back in just a few moments. Stay tuned.
are in Dagestan, one of the most ethnically and culturally diverse regions on the entire planet.
As you make your way through Dagestan, you will discover each region is known for its own unique arts and traditions.
Apart with Panchay Dhanvivathana, Secretary General of the Asian Cooperation Dialogue. Now, Dr. Panchay, I know you're a former diplomat, and diplomats usually eschew politically sensitive questions, but here you are in Russia, and Russia currently finds itself in a, well, in a proxy war with the West that affects, I think, pretty much the entire globe, but I wonder what effect it has on specifically your organization or on Asia?
In fact, I would rather not talk about politics, but only a few words. As you mentioned, so far so good within the ACD, especially in case of Russia, which has been a member with us since 2005. Russia has been very active in this forum, and of course, with good relationship with others, including history that prevails. So I believe we are doing fine. Mm-hmm.
Now, Russia has long been a Europe-centered nation, both politically and culturally, and its own pivot to Asia is relatively recent in historic terms. I think it began in 2005, 2006, when it joined your organization. How would you describe Russia from an Asian vantage point? What is distinct about Russia as an Asian nation rather than European nation?
Not only that, Russia has some part of the country in Asia, but also the policy and also the sentiment, not only of the government, but also people. This is as far as I'm concerned. So with that, I think this is the platform or the factor that we need Russia to be with us.
Now, I know that the word Asia originated in ancient Greece, and its first recorded use is attributed to Herodotus, who reportedly used it in reference to Anatolia, the Persian Empire, in contrast to Greece. So Asia originated as something other than the West. And I think historically, for many decades, if not centuries, there was a distinct Western effort to westernize Asia. Do you think Asia needs to be westernized?
Well, as Secretary General, I cannot speak for any country in particular, but in the overall perspective, and as far as I'm concerned, I could say that Asia can speak for Asia. We are free to do whatever is in the interest of Asia. So with that, I believe whether westernized or not, it's a non-issue for us.
Now, geographically speaking, Asia has both the highest and the lowest points on the surface of the Earth. It also has the broadest variety of vegetation, animal life, and human adaptation, human culture, which could be a major treasure, but it also could be a major curse because, you know, it creates conflict, it creates competition. I wonder what stands in the way of the Asians using this diversity to the full extent to make sure that they benefit from their synergies rather than still being divided by the old historical grievances.
Well, Asia is part of the international community. We are trying to be cooperative, for example, in the context of SDGs. Many of us are still developing or least developed countries. So we need not only technology, but also financial assistance from international organizations, from donor countries, from every sources of fund in order to help ourselves and to be adaptive, especially in terms of climate change and to comply with the Paris Agreement. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned climate change, and Asia is also subject to the world's wildest climatic extremes. It's the continent where natural calamities are felt most acutely, and nature, as we know, doesn't usually recognize national borders, nor does it give advanced warnings. Have you seen any difference in how your member states approach natural disasters or global calamities, especially in the aftermath of the COVID-19?
I just came back from Nepal, and I saw it that glaciers are melting. So that's, of course, part of the climate change. What I'm trying to say is that we are trying to be responsible, really, not only any particular country, but Asia as a whole. This is what I have witnessed so far. And how to do that is one thing, but the conceptually, we would rather be responsible and also call for the duty to cooperate with one another, not only within Asia, but also elsewhere, to address the common concerns or the common the global issues.
If I can take you back for a little while to the COVID-19 pandemic, for many international organizations, it was a very challenging time. And at that time, communication was suffering at most international fora. What was it like for you and your organization at that time? Do you think you have contributed efficiently to that crisis?
Yes, because when we adopted the Ankara Declaration, we called upon members to organize meetings of the public health ministries in order to address infectious diseases, including the pandemic and also COVID-19 for one. At the New York meeting, we are supposed to adopt another declaration, the Bahrain Declaration, which contains a clause in the very same direction. So with that, I could say that we have our firm commitment to addressing infectious diseases and also the pandemic.
Do you mean addressing them in bureaucratic way or in a practical way? Because I mean, at the midst of the pandemic, there were all the declarations were already on the table and signed, but when it came to practical implementation, that's where the major problem was.
In my view, it has to be a practical, of course, not only in a bureaucratic way, as you mentioned, not only about meetings of the public health ministries or related agencies, but also with stakeholders like the private sector, which would contribute very much, not only in terms of financial assistance, but also technology and know-how. And we have our blueprint which talk about other alternative medicine, like traditional medicine or herbal medicine, or which would be something that people could have easily access to and not so costly for them. So if we talk about just and fair and accessible medicine, perhaps this is one that we have touched upon.
Interesting. You mentioned traditional medicine, and it just occurred to me that many members of the ACD would consider themselves as countries where spirituality is still very much alive. Now, sure, there are lots of religious and spiritual diversity within Asia, but from my experience with many of these countries, they believe that humanity, despite all its differences, is one family. I wonder if that spiritual dimension is helping your consensus building initiatives in any way?
Oh, definitely. Because take Russia for one. You have what you call banya treatment and also honey medicine as well. So why not have it part of the treatment for people to be accessible? And Thailand, for one, the country where I came from, has been promoting medical tourism. So it's not only about medical treatment but or hospitalization, but also tourism that we can promote at the same time. And it's very lucrative. Mm-hmm.
So it makes money and also promotes the culture, promotes the traditional way of life.
Yes, that's right. So, yeah.
Yeah. Please. One other question I want to ask you is about food and water security, because you spoke about it being one of the pillars of the ACD framework, and it requires not only recognition of national interest, but a somewhat expanded understanding of, you know, what it is like to be human, or what it's like to belong to a human family. Do you think your member states fully practice what they preach when it comes to not only minding their own sovereign interests, but also making sure that they rise and let rise, or they survive and let others survive?
True it is that energy, food and water security interrelationships are perhaps transboundary in nature. When we talk about transboundary issues, it means that not only one country may act alone, but it calls for international cooperation. Under international law, I cannot help but recall the duty to cooperate. So if you ask me whether members are serious about that, yes, they are, not because it affect themselves or in their interest, but also they have their duty to cooperate in order to resolve it all in one and at the same time, and indeed at all levels.
Well, Dr. Porcheri, we have to leave it there. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
And thank you for watching. Hope to see you again on Worlds Apart.